is the sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming.
Today and every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs dramatizing the inner meanings of Negro life, based on the theme of Roy Otley's book, New World A-Coming. Today, the story of Negro humor, as seen through the eyes of Langston Hughes, well-known poet and novelist, starring Canada Lee, impersonating Mr. Langston Hughes, produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson.
Negroes laugh at many of the same things white Americans do. But they also laugh for different reasons at different things. Some incidents of Jim Crowism, which Langston Hughes has experienced, have amused him more than they have angered him, due, as nearly as he can analyze them, to their very absurdity. But here, let the well-known American poet recount these incidents for you himself.
Once I was driving south from New York to Richmond, Virginia, an hour or so below Washington, and those of us in the car became thirsty. Of course, someone suggested stopping at a roadside refreshment hut we saw ahead. We knew we couldn't eat or drink inside, since there is legal Jim Crow in Virginia. But it was my intention to purchase a few bottles of soda and bring them out to my friends. I stopped the car, got out, and walked toward the front door of the hut. It was a screen door with a brass handle on it. As I approached, I saw a poorly dressed old Southerner, the proprietor, holding the door on the inside. He shouted through the screen.
You can't come in here.
Well, I want to buy a few bottles of soda.
What do you want?
Some sodas.
You can't get them through the front here. Go around to the side of the house.
But there's no door there.
Well, you get them through a hole.
A hole? Where?
Walk around the side. We'll serve you there. We got a hole there cut out for Negroes.
The man continued frantically to hold the door as though I were a dangerous savage intent on murder. I went around the side of the little frame building, and there, sure enough, was a square hole cut in the wall through which colored people were served. I didn't buy, but I had to laugh. Who could help it? Almost within the shadow of the capital of American democracy, a little 2x4 roadside shack had cut a hole in its wall through which to serve Negroes. A colored person could not even come in the door. That seemed to me to be so absurd as to belong in Alice in Wonderland. Another time in Savannah, Georgia, I wanted to buy a copy of the Sunday New York Times and could find it nowhere in town except at the railroad station.
Train leaving for track 4 for Jacksonville, St. Augustine, Alaska, New Smyrna, Daytona, Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami. East Coast train leaving from track 4.
You perhaps know, of course, that there are colored waiting rooms in Southern Railroad stations. Well, in the colored Jim Crow waiting room, there was no newsstand, so I went outside on the sidewalk and around into the white waiting room, where I bought the Times without incident. But coming out of the station, just at the door, a policeman stopped me and said,
"Hey, you, wait a minute. You can't come in and out of this front door."
"But I just bought a paper. There's no newsstand in the colored waiting room."
"I don't care nothing about that. You can't come in here."
"But I just..." Okay, then let me out."
"You can't go out of this door neither."
"But look, I just came in through this
door."
"That
don't make no difference. You can't get out."
"But there's no other way out except through train sheds down the tracks."
"Yeah, that's right."
"Oh, look, officer, I just came in this way."
"Well, you can't go out this way. Negroes can't use this door."
"Okay, so how do I get out then?"
Only way I see is for you to walk the tracks.
Oh, so in order for me to get out of the Savannah station, I have to go through the train shed.
Yep.
And follow the railroad tracks and the street crossing.
That's right. That's the only way for Negroes to get out.
I've never experienced anything so absurd before in my life. The seriousness of that cop and utter stupidity of being at a door but not permitted to go through it kept me laughing all day. You see, I grew up in Kansas, so the absurdities of Southern Jim Crow were new to me at that time and unbelievably quaint. Once, when I was about 18, I was coming up from Mexico City to attend school in Cleveland. I went into the diner one evening as the train was heading north through Texas. I was seated alone when a man came in and spoke to the steward.
Steward?
Yes, sir?
I want a table.
Yes, sir. Right here, sir.
No. I don't like the corner tables. They're right over the wheels. Give me a table in the center of the car.
Very well, sir. As you wish, sir. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
A menu, please.
The man sat down opposite me at my table. He started to look at the menu. A few moments later, he stared at me with a look of utter amazement. Suddenly, he jumped up as though he'd been shot and cried,
"Why, you're a Negro, ain't you?
God, let me out of here."
And he fled from the dining room as though he had sat down in front of a lion by mistake. I'm still laughing at the incident. And I suppose the waiter who saw it is still laughing, too. As many Negroes as there are in Texas, what is there about one at a table in a public dining car that can so startle a white man that he runs away wild-eyed without his meal? Certainly the comedy of Jim Crow in action often outweighs the tragedy of so pathetic a mind as that man possessed. By no means is everything funny about Jim Crow. Once I had to wait for hours before driving my car onto a ferry boat in Louisiana.
All right, come on. All colored cars line up behind the whites to get on the ferry.
Sir, when do you suppose I'll be able to get on that ferry?
You'll have to get back of that line, behind them white cars, and wait your turn.
Yeah, but by the time the ferry crosses the river and more white cars will have gathered.
Now, don't raise your voice.
But the ferry has made 4 trips now, and each time the white cars fill the boat, the Negroes can't get on it.
Do you want to cross or don't you?
Yes. But why do Negro cars have to fall back to the very end of each newly formed line?
How dare you? You're in the suit. Don't forget that.
That was not funny. I was due to a lecture at a college 100 miles away that night. And I wanted to get there on time. Jim Crow caused me to be late. It's like that now, soldiers tell me, in regard to bus service for colored army men at some southern camps. If the white soldiers fill the bus, the colored soldiers must wait for the next one. By the time another bus comes, enough white soldiers have gathered to fill it, too. So again, the Negroes must wait. And thus it goes. Until sometimes the colored soldiers never get to town at all that night. Their passes run out with them still waiting at the gates of the camp for space in a bus. That, of course, is not funny either. Soldiers writing home about these insane inequalities at Democratic Army camps don't seem amused.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sanford Bickart speaking. For those who may have tuned in late, may I say that you're listening to stories by Langston Hughes, which were published in an article entitled, White Folks Do Some Funny Things, with Canada Lee impersonating the author. Now, returning to our story, or should I say stories, here is one that was told to Mr. Hughes by the late Robert Russo Moton, former president of Tuskegee, world's largest Negro school.
Dr. Melton once told the story of the student assembly when I was present. Before I retell it, I think certain factors should be explained. In the South, if a white woman were to be seen shaking hands with a Negro, the Negro might very well be whisked off to jail and tried on all sorts of false charges. That is the unwritten law of the South. And that is the fact. Well, Dr. Moulton said that he'd just come down from the North and that he'd taken a Pullman as far as Atlanta, Georgia. When he stepped from the Pullman in the early morning in the Atlanta station, he suddenly heard a woman cry out. He turned and saw that a woman had caught her heel in the top step of the train and was falling forward. Naturally, his first impulse as a man was to reach out his arms and catch her. But when he looked up and saw that she was a white woman, he dropped his arms. At this point in his story, the student audience roared with laughter. It amused his students no end. Every one of those kids knew that for a black man to catch a white woman in his arms in Atlanta might mean a lynching party. Naturally, Dr. Moulton dropped his arms. The woman landed head first on the concrete platform, and Dr. Moulton lived to tell the tale. But somehow, I couldn't laugh. It seemed to me one of the saddest stories in the world. The colored papers not long ago carried an item colored people read with laughter. It seems that, well, on one of the Jim Crow cars in the South, crowded as they are, white conductors and news vendors often take up a whole pair of seats with their paraphernalia, to the exclusion of Negro passengers. There were two colored soldiers standing in the crowded aisle, and one said to the other,
Boy, am I getting tired.
Yeah. We've been on our feet 4 hours now.
Yeah, man. Sure tough making these long jumps.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Why don't we put those magazines and conductor box on the floor?
Well, that's a good idea. Then we can sit for a while. But conductor won't mind.
Yeah, let's take this here. Yeah. Put it down over here.
Yeah,
now,
don't
be careful,
that,
all right? Now, then, put that over there. Now,
yeah,
I'll sit over here, and you sit over
here.
Boy, is this seat good.
Yeah, sure good to get a seat. I'm going to hang up my coat and get real comfortable.
Hey, say, be careful, man. Don't touch that cord.
What cord?
Well, that cord there. If you touch that, that makes the train stop.
I ain't touching no cord.
Oh, okay, man. Sit down.
Say, how comes you know so much about that cord?
Oh, I used to work in a railroad station, Red Cap.
Oh,
that's before I got in this here army uniform. See, if you pull that cord once, that makes the train stop. And if you pull that cord twice, that makes the train go.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you. Get off that seat.
What?
Well, why should we get off this
seat? Oh, we just sit down.
Here. I'm the conductor, and I said get off that seat.
But we got tired standing up.
Oh, yeah, we are tired.
Didn't you see I had my box on that seat?
Yeah, we put it down here on the floor. It'll be all right. Nobody will touch it.
Get off that seat. Put that box back where you found it.
Oh, you's being unreasonable, man. We are tired.
If you don't do as I tell, I'll stop this train and put you off.
Hey, he pulled a cord.
Hey, look at him, Mr. Conductor. What you want to do that for?
You're a bad Negro. Now get off the train.
Oh, we is due back at camp in the morning. We ain't going to be no AWOL.
I tell you, you're going to get off this train.
We ain't getting off. We's going back to camp, but you's getting off. Not us.
What?
Open that door,
come
buddy.
What are you doing? Yeah,
come on. Get him out of here. Get him out of here.
He's off. Pull the cord twice.
Yeah, I got him.
All right, quick. Before he gets back on.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
Close the door.
Oh, boy, that's his clothes.
Yeah, see? The train's moving.
Yeah.
I suppose environment creates varying nuances in regards to humor. Certainly there's nothing funny about a man being thrown off a train in the middle of the night. Not if he's a good man. But that particular conductor, in Negro eyes, was a devil. And everybody enjoys seeing a devil get his due.
Thank you.
the kind of anecdotes that currently amuse black America. New ones are being born by the minute. Their humor is based on the absurdity of white Americans giving freedom and democracy such a grandiose play while still selling Negroes strawberry sodas through a hole or threatening to throw black soldiers off a train for objecting to the outrageous conditions of the Southern Jim Crow car. Negroes think democracy's left hand apparently must not know what its right hand is doing. Yes, white folks do the funniest things. Presently, I know that not all white Americans practice Jim Crow at home and preach democracy abroad. But what puzzles me about those who do is their utter lack of humor concerning their own absurdities. I've read that Hitler has no sense of humor either. I suppose the greatest killers can't afford to laugh. Those most determined to Jim Crow me are grimly killing America. There's a song that expresses the real hopes of Negroes in America, and Josh White sings it. It's called What America Means to Me. Here, listen to it.
What is America to me? A name, a man, the flag I see, a certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, the friends that I have found, the folks beyond the railroad, and the people all around, the farmer and the worker, the sailor on the sea, the men who built this country, that's America to me. A house I live in, my neighbors white and black, the people who just came here are from generations back. The town hall and the soapbox, the torch of liberty, a home for all God's children, that's America to me. The words of old Abe Lincoln, of Jefferson and Payne, of Washington and Jackson, and the task that still remains, our little bridge at Concord, where freedom's fight began, our Gettysburg and Midway, and the story of Bataan. The house I live in, the goodness everywhere, a land of wealth and beauty, with enough for all to share, a land that we call freedom, the home of liberty, with its promise for tomorrow, that's America to me.
You've been listening to New World A-Coming, starring Canada Lee as Langston Hughes, well-known American poet and author. In a dramatization of Mr. Hughes' story, White Folks Do Some Funny Things, adapted for radio by Roy Otley, and produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Members of the cast today included Fred Carter, Roy Allen, Sanford Bickert, John Adair, Tom Hoyer, and Beatrice Melliker. Music for today's program was arranged by John Gart and James Lazito, conducted by Jerry Sears. Theme music composed by Duke Ellington. Next week, New World A-Coming will present one of the most exciting programs in their series, titled Report from the Western Front, gripping eyewitness stories of Negro troops in action with General Patton's armored tanks now rushing head-on toward Berlin. If you'd like to obtain tickets for this broadcast or future broadcasts of New World A-Coming, write to station WMCA, 1657 Broadway, Zone 19, New York City. And they will be forwarded to you at once. Your announcer, George Willard. This was a public service feature of WMCA. Friends, after mail call at the front, a soldier either goes back to his job with a cheered, warm feeling in his heart and an envelope in his hand, or with a suddenly acute sense of loneliness and dejection and no envelope. Nothing does more to shake a fighting man's hope and courage than bad news or no news from home. He needs continual reassurance of your well-being and of your affection for him. That's why he wants short, newsy letters from you often, rather than long letters that are few and far between. V-mail is ideal for the short, frequent letters he wants. It's fast, inexpensive, and private. And it's the surest form of overseas mail. You see, 1,800 V-mail letters on microfilm take up no more room than a package of cigarettes. So write short, cheerful, frequent letters. Use V-mail. Write a V-mail letter today. And here at home, you can back up your fighting man overseas in still another way. Supplies urgently needed by the fighting man you know may not reach him on time unless you pass along this important message. If you know an experienced seaman who is a licensed mate or engineering officer, a certified fireman, oiler, water tender, or able-bodied seaman, tell him he's urgently needed back at his old job. Tell him that he has the kind of experience that's needed now more than ever to deliver the goods our fighting men need. Urge him to sign up again. Tell him to apply at once by wiring collect to the Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C., giving his rating or license and his address. If he's accepted for duty, he'll be put on standby pay immediately and furnished transportation to the port of assignment. Remember, some seamen may not know that he's needed. It's your duty to tell him. This announcement from the Army and Navy Departments and the War Shipping Administration is brought to you as a public service. You to stay tuned to this station to hear the Halls of Congress, a new important radio series presenting in dramatic form actual debates held in the United States Congress during the past week. Halls of Congress is on the air at 3:30. This is America's leading independent station.